Purple Dinosaur Podcast arrives on your podcast, your CB radio.
Yep. Yeah.
Your Commodore 64. Your original click wheel iPod.
On your carrier pigeon? I don't know. What?
On the Pony Express brings you episode number 81. Grooved into a solid gold record. Well, we're off the rails early. Hi, everyone. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
And welcome into this week's edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, in which we talk Colorado Rockies baseball. And
we're thinking of changing the name.
This week, let's just talk about something else. All-star breaks behind them. They haven't played well.
Three and three since the break.
Against two bad teams.
Against two last place teams.
Cool. Cool. Drop two out of three against a bad Rays. And now, I mean, to be fair, you know, you go up against a very, very good prospect in Blake Snell.
And then Chris Archer became Chris Archer finally.
The day after. So, you know, it's going to happen. But
And the Rockies are still 2.5 games shy of fourth place, by the way. They are still in third with a nice little cushion over the Padres and D-backs.
You know, it's kind of funny.
It's pretty amazing.
We've talked a lot about we made an appearance on the Change the Padres podcast at one time before the season started. And we talked a lot about how we respect those types of Padres fans. There's a large contingent of Padres fans, maybe not so much. But I did think that it was quite amusing that after the Drew Pomeranz trade went down, the Change the Padres guys tried to troll us about Jeff Hoffman versus Anderson Espinoza.
Your team
is 14 games under 500, 16 games back in the division, and basically would have been competitive by now had the GM that you hired not done everything that he's done. People forget the Padres system was really, really good before AJ Preller just decided, let's go acquire every available major leaguer.
Yep.
So, like, yeah, okay.
Trey Turner and Joe Ross would have looked really nice in San
Diego.
Enjoy
trying to rebuild that.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Yeah. Have Tyson Ross's arm blows out.
But yeah, the Padres are still in fourth place, and
Padres fans are the most dickish fans I've ever encountered.
It's
amazing. Like, besides like the obvious ones, Giants fans, Dodgers fans, Cardinals fans, whatever. Like, that's obvious. Low key dickish fans in baseball are Padres fans.
Yeah, they are really not friendly. Not at all. Not at all. You're bad.
Yeah,
Padres fans, your team is bad, and I will never say these words ever again, I'm not even going to say those words. I feel really bad for Shelby Miller. I don't feel bad for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Feel really bad for Shelby Miller.
Yeah.
It has just been a dumpster fire for the D-backs this year. And the thing that's so strange about it is Shelby Miller has been actually really good in his time in the minor leagues, and not like he should be good bitching against minor leaguers. They suck. Yeah, I get that. But he's been good in a way that suggests, man, what the hell is going on with you when you get to the major league? So far this season, he's made two rehab starts for the Class A advanced Visalia Rawhide. Yes, he should be dominating at that level. 2-0 record is 0.75 ERA. Struck out 19 in 12 innings against one walk.
That's a big number.
Reno made one appearance for the AAA Reno Aces, 10 strikeouts, 2 walks over 6 and 2 thirds. He gave up 3 runs, respectable 4.05 ERA. But in 14 starts for the Diamondbacks this year, Shelby Miller is 2-9 with a 7.14 ERA. He has allowed a whip of 1.745. Oh. Like, what on earth?
What the hell happened?
I don't feel bad for the D-backs at all, but I do feel really bad for Shelby Miller, because that is a guy who he just can't catch a break anywhere in his career. Great in 2013, very good in 2014. 2015 goes on to Atlanta, was really brilliant, and finished 6-17 with a 3.02 ERA because the Braves gave him like a quarter of a run of support.
Yeah. And it's got to be rubbing salt in the wound that Dansby Swanson right now at 22 years old is, you know, popped 7 bombs in Double A. OPS is 768, 816 OPS overall this year between Carolina and Mississippi. That's your number one overall pick last year, and he's just getting started.
Yeah. Aaron Blair has already made starts and contributions at the major league level for the Braves. And, oh, by the way, they also gave up Touki Toussaint, not in that trade, but Touki, a first-round pick a couple of years ago, who the Braves are, you know, more than likely going to turn into a stud. So, anyway, things could be worse, Rockies fans, is the way we open up this 81st episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Before we get started, head on over to iTunes and give us a rating and a review and a subscription if you would be so kind. And you can also head to purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com and get yourself hooked up with some PDP t-shirts.
Buy our stuff.
There. Yeah, get our stuff. It's awesome stuff. I need to get our stuff. I don't have any of our new stuff.
What? You suck. You suck.
I'm going to email Humble Monster right now.
Yeah.
Dear guys.
Dear Humble Monster.
Love you. So anyway, yeah, it's, you know, nah. We didn't think they were going to compete. We didn't think they were going to go to the playoffs. And they're playing. They are who we thought they were as of right now. And you know what? That's okay.
What did we call?
We thought this team was going to be
77 wins, pretty much. Is that kind of what we called? That was being optimistic, I think.
I think one of us said 76. One of us said 77, something like that.
Guess someone
right
wanted
now,
Price is Right the other. Yeah.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. $1.
You asshole. $1. Get over here.
But, you know, they look like they're going to be a 70 to 75 win team.
Yeah,
which about
is
what we
about
figured.
Right.
So, in that, what becomes interesting is a topic that we left undiscussed last week because we wanted to discuss it this week, and let's get into it. We are 10 days or so away from the Major League Baseball trade deadline in the 2016 season, which is coming up on August 1st. That's the non-waiver trade deadline, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Mountain Time. Anthony, your thoughts. Obviously, this team is not going to be buying.
Right.
They, I would assume, will be selling. But if the Rockies don't get something that they feel like is worth selling for, I don't think Jeff Breidich is going to force a deal. But give me some of your thoughts as we approach this deadline.
Well, first of all, I want to point out one thing that's kind of interesting, a number that a lot of – it's been more in favor, I guess, over the last few seasons. But run differential is a big number that you can – that basically – how many runs you score against how many runs you allow. And obviously a very positive number is a good thing and a negative number is a bad thing. I believe the Cubs lead in all baseball at +151, which is a very, very good number. One that's more closer to a historical number. The Rockies right now are only -19 in run differential. It's about middle of the pack in the National League. And if that stayed right there, that'd be the 10th best mark in franchise history. Already, they've only had 8 seasons in their entire franchise history where they have had a positive run differential. 07 and 09 were the top two at +102 and +89. 95, they were +2, but still positive. So last year, they were -107, one of the worst marks in franchise history. So if you don't see that there are positives coming from this season, I don't really know how to help you. That being said, let's send this entire team into the sun and blow it all up just
blow
for the sake
up.
Of the podcast.
How terrible.
That? So let's talk about some of the guys that really are the biggest names on the trade block for the Rockies. And that would be a few names out there. Charlie Blackmon is one. Carlos Gonzalez is another. Jorge De La Rosa is another. And Boone Logan are four guys who have the ability to be traded in the next couple of weeks, or more likely to be traded more than some others. But Boone Logan, I think, should absolutely be dealt to somebody. He's been very, very good against left-handers this year. He could very much help a contender down the stretch if someone loses out on the Andrew Miller sweepstakes or the Aroldis Chapman sweepstakes and are still looking for a very solid left-handed reliever for a rental. We got a Boone Logan sitting right here for you. Charlie Blackmon and Carlos Gonzalez are two guys that they don't necessarily need to trade at this point. They still have cargo for one more year, albeit at $20 million. Chuck still has a few more years left with the Rockies in terms of before he gets really expensive. So Charlie would probably get a much bigger haul considering what he's done the last few years, not just a Coors Creation kind of guy. Carlos Gonzalez could still fetch something pretty solid considering the ability that he has. And then Jorge De La Rosa, who was at the end of his contract here. He did not have a very good showing his last time out against Tampa Bay, tied a career high with 9 runs allowed in that game. I don't know. I think Boone has got to be 100% gone. And I think I'm not sure what they could get for a guy like Jorge De La Rosa at this point, considering he's just a rental.
Makes you think back.
What they could have gotten.
2 years
ago,
what they could have gotten.
Eduardo Rodriguez from the Baltimore Orioles.
Cool.
I don't know. What do you think? Those are the four guys that I had that will absolutely have the highest likelihood of being traded over the next couple of weeks. What do you think?
No, I think I agree with that group. And I think, really, when you look at the way this team is constructed right now, those are the only guys that have really realistic value. Yes. You know,
but Mark Reynolds, maybe. If someone wants some right-handed pop, he's been pretty, at least decently solid this year. Ryan Rayburn could be a guy talked about as well. If a team needs some pop against left-handed pitchers coming off the bench.
I think Reynolds is definitely one to keep an eye on, especially with the way he's really remade himself as a hitter this year. Mark Reynolds is hitting .281.
Yeah.
And, you know, we know Mark Reynolds is going to strike out a lot, but he's only struck out 81 times in 84 games. Like, has there been a time in Mark Reynolds' career where he's not struck out at least once a game on average? So I think those right now would be – that's the core four. You know, it's like the glory days for the New York Yankees around here. But the Rockies core four is which decent to sort of decent veterans can you trade away for prospects? What I will say is I think that the deal that I would be most excited to see happen would be Charlie Blackmon, because then
not to lose Chuck at all,
because, you know, Chuck has turned himself, and we've talked about this a lot, and I feel like we'll constantly atone for it, but Chuck has turned himself into a hell of a good baseball player.
He's having a career year right now.
Yeah. Chuck right now is slashing .305, .368, .481. And yes, those numbers will dip when he gets away from Coors Field, but Chuck has turned himself into a hell of a baseball player.
He's still hitting .284, .346, .444 away from Coors Field. That's a
It's not
going to
be some
hitter.
Drastic drop. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And he takes pitches. He's putting together really good at bats, and he has made himself into a very, very good defensive outfielder.
I think so. Yeah.
There was a report this week that the Washington Nationals could be interested in Charlie Blackmon. And so to clarify, the Rockies, that would be the deal that would excite me most if the Rockies made it. And yes, not because it would be getting Chuck out of town, but because then it opens the door to David Dahl. I don't know if it opens the door to David Dahl in 2016, but it opens the door to David Dahl,
right,
who would have the lead on getting that starting job in 2017. Obviously, after what the Rockies saw from Trevor Story this year, they're certainly not going to be scared to give a rookie an opening day starting nod, especially somebody who is as good and as talented as David Dahl is. But that to me would be the one that would excite me the most. Carlos Gonzalez would be a very exciting deal in terms of the prospect haul that you could get back for him, but it would suck. I would be, and God knows how much we've discussed this, but the emotional impact of the Tulo trade, I'd be way sadder to see Cargo leave than to see Tulo leave. I don't know. Maybe it's my love of Latin players and dudes with good bat drops and the excitement that he brings.
Well, you mean
handsome men. And devastatingly handsome men. Yeah. I will say this. Cargo, I interviewed Cargo for a story I wrote about the Venezuelan Summer League shutting down for 2016. And I will say that interviewing Cargo face-to-face early on in the morning at spring training, I was like, okay, good. At least it's not. I didn't leave like with my heart aflutter. I was like, okay, he's a normal looking guy sometimes when you're around him.
I interviewed him once after a spring training game.
Yeah.
And it was not fair.
It doesn't seem it's not fair that somebody can be that good and that good looking. So I was glad to have caught him in the morning when everybody looks terrible. And I was like, okay, well, at least there is a time where he's like an 8. You know.
So what were we talking about? I don't know.
So anyway, I don't know. Dreaminess. But it would suck to lose Cargo. Like, I would be super bummed to see Cargo go. But at the same time, that is your most marquee trade piece.
Yes.
By far.
And then there's still another year left on that deal, so he's not just a rental. So the haul back could be a little bit better than if you waited to trade him either in this offseason or even in the middle of next year, you know?
You know what I'd be super excited to see? If the Rockies made a deal of some kind to bring in Joey Gallo. Joey Gallo, he's seen a little bit of first base, whatever, but Joey Gallo blocked everywhere at the major league level.
Yeah.
He's not going to play third in Denver, obviously, but Joey Gallo would hit – he would hit a home run to the goddamn moon if he played here.
I would
like,
only...
It would clear low Earth orbit.
I'd only be worried about Joey Gallo becoming just the second coming of Ian Stewart.
Oh, I don't care. If one time that he connects on a 900-foot home run would be so worth it. They could trade all four of those guys to the Rangers for Joey Gallo just to watch Joey Gallo take BP at Coors Field every day. I would be
in it. Gallo OPSing 935 in the PCL this year, hitting just .249.
Yeah, he's not hitting that well, but
16 bombs, 388 OBP.
That's crazy.
51 walks in 65 games, which is very
good.
84 strikeouts. That's his MO, though.
Oof, just to watch him take BP at Coors, I'd be so down. But there are some teams. These are my good pal Sam Dykstra at MILB.com put together a great story you can check out on the site right now. It's his latest tool shed column in which he said, which farm systems are in the best position for a blockbuster deal? And he named six of them. The Texas Rangers, headlined by Gallo. The Boston Red Sox, who have a glut of prospects. And Dave Dombrowski isn't really all about graduating prospect talent. That's a guy who likes to bring in major league talent, obviously, as evidenced by what he's done since really taking over a large stake in the player development. And
large
also
steak.
Sounds delicious. Nice T-bone. Love that T-bone. They could be in the mix. The Cubs, still loaded with prospects, and obviously made a deal the other day, sent Dan Vogelbach away, got back Mike Montgomery and one other pitcher from the Seattle Mariners.
I didn't realize the hilarious pictures of Dan Vogelbach that have been circulating around the internet since he got drafted by the Cubbies.
Dan Vogelbach is...
He looks like he ate Kyle Schwarber and then lost 10 years off his life. And like lost by, I mean like he went back in time 10 years.
He really is. It's incredible how the Cubs had two Kyle Schwarbers,
right?
One of them just being the markedly worse, but virtually the same Kyle Schwarber. Like Dan Vogelbach is the exact. They look the same. They have the same terrible facial hair.
Yeah.
They just rake at the plate. They just kill baseballs.
Yeah. Great eyes at the plate. Yeah.
Yeah. Very questionable defensively. Dan Vogelbach is markedly worse defensively than Kyle Schwarber, and Kyle Schwarber is a very below average
and
defender.
Theo Epstein in his quotes about Vogelbach yesterday coming out to the media, he's like, yeah, he was basically a DH and we're a National League team, so we traded him to the AL. It's like, oh, okay.
And the Mariners, the Mariners have gone after acquiring DHs before. That's never backfired for them, so I'm sure it'll go great. The other three teams in Sam's column, the Los Angeles Dodgers, the Washington Nationals, the Cleveland Indians. Some teams to keep an eye on in that. The Nationals are certainly one of them, eyeing Charlie Blackmon. I think the Rockies and Indians have pieces that could make sense.
If the Rockies are looking for a first baseman, the first base prospects, the name that would be on everybody's lips would be Bobby Bradley, who right now is kicking some ass in the Carolina League after winning the AZL MVP. I believe he might have won the late count, Low A MVP, the South
Midwest
Sally League or Midwest League. Yeah, no, Sally League MVP. Lake County's in the Sally League, aren't they? I believe.
No, Midwest.
You're.
They're one of those teams that started, I think, in the Sally League and then switched after a year.
Switched.
I think it was them and Bowling Green.
Yes. So 890 OPS last year. This year so far in the Carolina League, a fairly tough league for hitters. He's got 17 bombs, OPS of 880. Strikes out a lot, but he walks a lot as well. The OBP at 381 this year. That's only risen pretty much every year since he left the Arizona League. So he would be probably the centerpiece should the Rockies and Indians go on trade talks. The Rockies are looking for that first base prospect forever. Bobby Bradley is only 20 years old, and he has shown some serious, serious pop left-handed bat in the high A right now.
So, there's a possibility. It just seems like, the four that Anthony noted – Charlie Blackmon, Carlos Gonzalez, Boone Logan, and Jorge De La Rosa, those are the most likely guys to be gone. The reason that the two pitchers are more likely is because they are free agents after this season. They also, and Boone Logan, I think this year has done a lot to increase his value.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially compared to what he would have been this time last year or 2 years ago. But again, you're not going to get a ton back for a relief pitcher who's going to be a 3 month rental.
No.
And at this stage, you're really not going to.
You're looking at probably a low A, high A arm.
Yeah.
Probably at that point. A guy you can maybe swing on, like German Marquez. That the Rockies did with the Corey Dickerson trade, who was seen as the quote-unquote throw-in, prospect throw-in, I guess, for Kevin Padlo. And he has turned into one of the better pitchers in the Eastern League this year.
So that brings us to Jorge De La Rosa, who really saved himself a lot in the way he pitched between May 28th and his last time out last night against the Rays. Over that span of time, once he got back in the rotation, De La Rosa gave up three or fewer runs – in all six of his starts between June 14th and July 15th, and also went six innings or seven in five of those outings. And in the one in which he didn't, it was his first start back when five shutout innings against the Yankees on June 14th.
Right.
So De La Rosa has pitched pretty well, last time out notwithstanding. But again, you're going to deal him away to a team that will only have him for a few months, so you're not going to get a massive haul back for him.
And you have to imagine a team that needs starting pitching. Someone like the Rangers might be looking at him, and they would be looking at him and say, okay, well, Hitters Park, De La Rosa, whatever. He's done well in Coors Field in his career, 4.26 ERA in 102 games, 94 starts. You got to hope that maybe a dumb team will look at his win-loss record at Coors Field of 52-19 in that time. Oh, wow, he's learned how to pitch in a tough pitch in tough hitter's park. And then go from there, might be look at a little bit better haul there. But no, it's very possible that Jorge De La Rosa could be, or it should be on the move right there. Give him a chance, go to a contender. You know, the Rockies aren't going to be that guy this year. Throw him a bone. He has done so much for this organization. He's really got pretty much every record in the Rockies pitchers you could possibly think of. Let him try to pitch for a contender. Give him that opportunity, because when he's done so for the Rockies, I mean, in 07 and 09, he was pretty good.
Yeah.
Or in 09, excuse me, not in 07, but in 09. He was pretty good that year. And I think he deserves, if he's going to go out of, you know, go out of favor with the Rockies, then get him on a contender. Let him try to pitch in a pennant race.
Here, we're going to go hot take central here. I'm going to make a prediction. Then I want you to make a prediction. Of those four guys, my belief is that three of them will be traded, and the one who is not is Carlos Gonzalez.
Ooh, okay.
Cargo's going to stick it out here. And I think the reason for that is right now his money does not sink the organization. When
it's
it was
$20 million next year,
Chulo,
yeah.
And that's manageable. It's a lot of money, obviously, to sink into a team
but you're not,
that doesn't have a massive
You're
payroll.
Not paying anybody else anybody any kind of money, especially
exactly.
De La Rosa's off the books after this year. Cargo will be basically 75% of your payroll at the outset
Pretty
of the
much.
Season.
That's what it seems like. Yeah. No, I mean, he
it's not an actual
be,
number. It's going to be a lot of it.
What it was when Tulo was here was that Cargo and Tulo would have commanded, wasn't it 60% of the payroll?
And you throw in DLR, it was like 80%. Yeah.
Yeah. But next season, who are they paying? Nobody. It seems like next year, basically everybody's like pre-arbitration almost is what it feels like. It's not that way, but they're just not shelling out big money to anybody outside of Carlos Gonzalez, which is why I think unless they get blown away, I don't think they're going to deal him. The other thing that I really like about Cargo this year, it seems like the trade of Troy Tulowitzki, I think, really lit a fire under Cargo to say, this is my team. And where that was most emblematic was when Tulo came back and Cargo hit the home run in that game. His quote post game was something along the lines of, I wanted to make sure people knew I was still the guy wearing purple. I was still the man here.
Damn right.
And that, if I'm Jeff Breidich, if I'm the front office, I love that.
Yeah.
I want a guy like that. I don't want the guy who's constantly going to Saunders or whatever it is and trying to underhandedly discuss the things he hates about being a member of the organization. On the one hand, okay, I guess that's somewhat productive if you are saying the things that you think need to be changed.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, put your name to it.
Yeah.
And so, I'm not saying that Tulo was the guy who was constantly employing his levels of subterfuge to try to sink things around the clubhouse, but it became very evident to us and has since become extremely evident. Tulo was not in the best state of mind as a member of the organization. And I think shipping him out has lit that under Cargo that he wants to be the guy that takes this team to a new level. Yeah.
So next year, the Rockies,
maybe not even a new level, maybe just a level they had previously reached.
As of right now, the Rockies have about $65 million in contracts for next year. And that includes Jose Reyes's $22 million. So 65, a third of that is Jose Reyes.
Ugh.
Yeah. 20 is Carlos Gonzalez, 8 for Gerardo Parra, 5 for Jason Mott, Arb 2 for DJ LeMahieu, probably about 5 million. Chad Qualls, 3.5 million. Ottavino, 2 million. That's what, according to SpotTrack, that's what it has right now.
Okay.
And that's it.
You know, and I just feel like that's manageable. That's doable for this team. They are not right now.
Considering they had like, what, 100 and some million this year for their payroll.
Yeah. They are not hamstrung the way that you would have expected them to put themselves out there. It's right. not the whole, oh, woe is us. We don't have the money to afford these guys.
Yeah, 108 million total right payroll. Now. Yeah, this year. Yeah.
So that's my pick. My pick is three of those guys are gone. Cargo's the one who stays. I think Blackman, they'll make a deal. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if Charlie Blackman sticks around. But De La Rosa, if you can get anything for De La Rosa, you can get anything for Boone Logan. Get it for him.
Yep.
And let those guys go have success somewhere else.
Yeah.
That is almost what makes me as sad about that 2013 deal, 2014 deal that was quashed with De La Rosa, was it didn't give De La Rosa a chance to go somewhere and pitch in meaningful games. That dude...
And the thing, it was understood at the time, too, that he was looking to re-sign with the Rockies after the season had ended. The Rockies were in the middle of a lost season, and they could have traded Jorge De La Rosa for a rental. He was a free agent. He said he wanted to come back and sign with the team. Now, of course, he could have been offered more by another team. That was somewhat unlikely. But they could have gotten a nice prospect for him in Eduardo Rodriguez. They could have re-signed him back at the end of the year, and it would have just been like, oh, they just fleeced the Orioles for a prospect, which a lot of teams are known to do. And yet, nope. DOD sat on that one.
Nope.
Is,
it was either him or it was quashed by Monfort. There's never been full confirmation, but it seems like Dick was the one who came in and said, no, we're not going to trade him. He's the best pitcher in franchise history. Yeah, which is why you should get another guy who could be the next one.
Yep.
Theoretically. So yeah, that went well.
That's a pretty good take there. I like that.
Okay.
I do. Man, it's so funny thinking about these kind of things. You never, because we're inherently pessimistic when it comes to the Rockies trying to make moves that would be in the organization's best interests.
Yeah.
Right? So I think it's weird to be like, oh, yeah, they're going to trade Jorge De La Rosa. Or, oh, yeah, they're going to trade Carlos Gonzalez. Or they'll trade Charlie Blackman before he gets too expensive for them and get some nice prospects in return. Because they've never done that.
Yeah.
I mean, the difference is they did it with Tulo. And that's been the standard right now is the Tulo trade, and that was not even a year ago.
Yeah, I mean,
getting about to the year anniversary.
He's one for one.
Yeah,
he's one for one in big deadlines and making a big deal.
Yeah,
but it's not going to, for those of us who have been around for this long, it's not going to erase the 22 years prior to him in which they didn't do anything, you know, to make those big types of moves and try to commit toward. This is when we see ourselves being competitive and this is how we're going to get there. It's always been this 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Maybe we try making a trade here. Maybe we try making a free agent signing. Maybe we develop the pitchers this way. Maybe we put in a 75 pitch limit and four starters and have piggyback guys. Like there's
maybe
never
we soak
been
the balls
cogent...
in bleach and then give them to the visitors. And then
there's never been just one school of thought of this is how we're going to build everything. But with Jeff Breidich,
they have a plan.
It seems like they have that plan.
Yeah.
They're acquiring power arms in the starting pitching staff and in the bullpen. They're developing the position player talent that they already have, and they're trying to bring in a lot of depth to be the next generation of successful arms at Coors Field. But, yeah, we've never seen that, so we really have no reason to be optimistic about it. It just so happens that Jeff Breidich, like I said, is one for one. But you need to continue to see that if you're a Rockies fan.
Yeah, I would be absolutely shocked, but not surprised, I guess, which is the weird thing, because they need to do this. They need to trade Boone Logan. They need to trade Jorge De La Rosa. They don't need to trade Blackman or Cargill, but at least those two guys need to be dealt. And that's where I'm going to say I think they keep Blackman and Cargo, and I think they trade DLR, and I think they trade Boone.
Okay. Okay.
I'm not saying they should. I'm saying I think that is what's going to happen.
I could definitely see that as well.
But that's the beauty of it, because they can trade these outfielders because they have such a glut of high-impact outfielders at the upper rungs of the minor league ladder. And your David Dahls, your Raimel Tapia leading the Eastern League in hitting, again, because that's all Raimel Tapia ever does. Yep. Dahl is close. We're going to talk to Chris Jackson a little bit later. He can give us some insight on a Jordan Patterson, whether or not he thinks that he could be an impact big league bat. That's a name we get a lot on Twitter about Jordan Patterson. Get Jordan Patterson up here. And, you know, Brandon Barnes, God love him. Great guy. Seems like a great guy in the clubhouse. I have not seen him get a hit the entire year. And he's not having competitive at bats. He's not doing enough and pulling his weight enough to keep a spot in the big league roster, especially when you have guys who are performing so well in Albuquerque.
So, as Anthony noted, we will hear from our good pal Chris Jackson coming up in just a short bit from PurpleRow.com, a website that covers the Colorado Rockies, as I've been told. One guy that I want to talk about before we get to Chris Jackson is one John Gray. John Gray has been really good at baseball. We've talked about John Gray a ton, but we haven't really talked about just how good he's been since those two rough starts that got his season going back in the month of April. Those two, he went against the Dodgers on April 22nd, 5 runs on 7 hits over 5 innings. He struck out 10 and walked 2. The next time out against the Pittsburgh Pirates, 3 2/3, 9 hits, 6 runs all earned, struck out 2, walked 1. Those were brutal. Since then, with the exception of that one start against the Cardinals on May 19th, John Gray has been basically brilliant. In his 14 starts after those two, a 5-4 record, a 3.62 ERA, he struck out 91 batters in 87 innings. He's walked 29, working with a whip of 1.07 over that span of time. And he's also generating 1.32 outs on the air for on the ground for everyone in the air, which is pretty good. And opponents are batting 205 against him. We have reached the point where it's time to stop talking about, well, if John Gray can keep it going. This is basically a full season now where John Gray is keeping it going.
John Gray's an ace. His last 10 starts, he's gone at least into the sixth inning in all but one of those starts. Of his last 10, averaging about 6 1/3 innings per start, which for the Rockies is incredible. 64 punchies and 63 2/3, a 203 opponent average, 107 whip. It doesn't matter any way you slice it. This is an ace, and it's the first one the Rockies have had since Ubaldo, maybe even arguably in their entire history. I think this is what we have always been waiting for the Rockies. Even with Ubaldo, what he was appointment viewing in 2010. We know that. John Gray is more dominant in a lot of ways than Ubaldo was. He's got a lot more strikeout capability. He misses a lot more bats than Ubaldo did, even when Ubaldo was going in his perfect, first half of 2010, where he was the best pitcher in all of baseball. This is something so unprecedented for the Rockies that we're still trying to figure out how to deal with it. His last start against the Braves ended up taking a no decision. No surprise there, but 7 shutout innings, 8 strikeouts, which is becoming more of a norm for him, getting at least 6, 7, 8 strikeouts in a game. I don't know what else we can say about him. I mean, he is basically everything that we have hoped for the last 22 years. And he is one of those rare guys the Rockies have had. The Rockies have always had a pitcher in the minors who was going to become the next ace. They've always had a guy. And it's always either been horrible or the guy's come up and he's been okay, or they've done decently well. Your Aaron Cooks, your Jeff Francis's, your Jolie Chassin's, your whatever, right. they've done okay for a number of times, but you've never had a guy like John Gray who had the pedigree he had, third overall pick, big time arm coming out of Oklahoma. You never had those guys that were able to come through and really reinforce all the prospect pedigree around them and all the scouting reports, all the scouting that the Rockies did for this kind of guy. You've always heard that, oh yeah, well, you know, they got this guy in the sticks throwing, 99 in Asheville. It's like, okay, but then he flames out 2 years later. John Gray's the complete and total package. He is as advertised, which even I think we're all surprised about that. But it's going to suck that his couple of really rough starts, that one he had against the Cardinals, 2 was the 9 runs in 3 1/3 innings, they're really going to hurt his overall numbers throughout the year, because he really is going to have one of the best pitching seasons that a Rockies pitcher has ever seen.
The thing, you mentioned that they've always had somebody, and we've mentioned this before. That's how it's always felt. The Rockies have always had a guy. They've never had multiple guys, and even the guys that they've had who have been, supposedly the next studs in waiting, for my money, the most heralded Rockies pitching prospect ever before John Gray was Chinhui Sao.
Yeah.
And Chinhui Sao really never it work as a member of the Rockies. He ended up as a closer for the Rockies. The Rockies have never had an arm. And we said this, especially last year when all the conversation was, when's John Gray coming up? When's John Gray coming up? They've never had an arm like him.
Yeah.
And that is the difference maker in this is this is what John Gray is supposed to do, because this is what major league organizations develop into big time aces. This is, I'm not comparing him in this regard, but this is the Clayton Kershaw road. You get a guy who is that good and you ensure that he is able to be that good at the major league level. The Rockies have just never done that before.
Yeah.
And what's so exciting is that beyond him, they have all these other dudes who are that good too. You know, Jeff Hoffman being one of them, obviously, who's a guy we're going to talk about a lot here coming up in just a few minutes with Chris Jackson, Purple Row. But it's not just Jeff Hoffman. It's still, to an extent, I think Kyle Freeland fits in there. Antonio Senzatella certainly fits in there. German Marquez, the way people have talked about him in the Eastern League this year, his numbers, 8-5, 2.88 ERA and 18 starts. He's that good. They just have a glut of these guys now, and we've never seen that before.
And
so that's what makes it more exciting when you see John Gray's success.
And for Rockies fans, we need a comparison. We need someone to look back on and say, okay, how is he compared to this guy? Ubaldo Jimenez is pretty much considered the best Rockies pitcher in franchise history, right? I mean, considering what he did, he started an all-star game. He was that good.
In terms of his talent,
in terms of his talent, sure.
Yeah, right.
DLR's got all the records. You know, Chacin had a very good start to his career, but you look at the comparisons between John Gray and Ubaldo Jimenez. So their first 25 starts with the Rockies, the team win loss, 7-18 for Gray, 8-17 for Ubaldo, 5-6, the individual record for Gray, 5-7 for Ubaldo, 4.69 ERA for Gray, 4.63 for Ubaldo. And the comparisons keep going. And I'll tweet this out when we get done with it, with this podcast today. But the comparisons you see between John Gray and Ubaldo Jimenez through their first 25 starts are almost eerie to a point. The big difference, John Gray had 143 strikeouts in his first 25 starts. Ubaldo only had 109 with about 22 more walks than John Gray had in that same time frame. So it really is amazing what those two guys have done, just the linear paths that their beginning of their careers have taken. And then Ubaldo took the next step the next couple of years and became one of the better pitchers in all of baseball. But he didn't have the same kind of command that John Gray had at the early age. He didn't have the strikeout stuff that John Gray had at an early age. And through the first 25 starts, the difference was about 140 days. They're both 24 years old at that time. It really is eerie looking at the numbers, the comparison through the first 25 starts with the Rockies. And John Gray's already got Ubaldo in a lot of ways that really bode well for the future.
It's pretty exciting. It's pretty exciting when you look at the fact that maybe they're not going to be terrible. This season doesn't factor into that. They're not going to the playoffs. They're not playing that well as of late. But hopefully they can get well.
But they've got John Gray. And that's
got John Gray.
That's a reason to watch the Rockies at least once every 5 days. And Tyler Anderson has been awesome, too, so far. Such a great story. He's had one of the best starts. Probably, if not, I would say probably the best seven-game start of any Rockies rookie in their career. That is, the numbers, I mean, I've crunched the numbers. The numbers are pretty much there in most categories. He is the best Rockies rookie through his first seven starts in franchise history.
Yeah, no, I would completely agree with that. And, you know, we've discussed this before, too. What John Gray is bringing right now, and Tyler Anderson to an extent, too, but certainly John Gray, is he's bringing a level of excitement that you don't really remember having, aside from that one stretch for Ubaldo. When you see John Gray come up as the probable, you think, all right, I got to be around to watch that. Even if they finish this game this season, you know, 25 games under 500, he still provides that jolt where you think, this is appointment viewing for me.
Yep.
And the Rockies have rarely, if never, had that on the pitcher's mound for any length of time.
But Roy Oswalt didn't do it for you?
You know, I was more of a Jamie Moyer guy.
Yeah, who wasn't?
I always was. So with that, John Gray being really good, Tyler Anderson being really good, those two guys have spent some time in AAA Albuquerque over the last couple of seasons, and we will catch up with our good pal Chris Jackson of Purple Row, who joins the show to talk all things Topes coming up next. Headed down I-25 to the home of the Albuquerque Isotopes, which is where we find our good pal Chris Jackson, now of PurpleRow.com. Chris, welcome back to the show. What's going on?
Woo!
Not much, just trying to beat the heat at one of our local brewing establishments right now.
Which is the best way to beat heat. What's it been like down there? How bad has it been?
It's been hovering in the high 90s, low 100s,
okay.
And it's not Arizona hot, but it's for here, we're not used to this much sustained heat. You know, it'll spike up a few times during the year, but we've never had a sustained block of heat quite like this.
Gross. Gross.
Well, speaking of heat and hot and stuff like that, of that nature, there's
look
a guy.
You jumping in with a segue.
I'm just
going to
jump
it.
Right in with
love
that segue. It. Just boom, boom, boom. God, I'm feeling it already. There is a guy who had just came up to the Topes recently over the last couple of weeks. His name is David Dahl, and he has done some marvelous things so far with the Topes. What has he shown you so far, and what has he really brought to this team just from the outset? Because the numbers are pretty ridiculous right now. He's hitting .491 in 14 games. That's it. He's about .500.
Is that good?
.542 OBP, .943 slugging, homers, couple of triples, five doubles. The list can go on. What has he brought to this team in the first 2 weeks he's been there?
I mean, he's brought a giant shot of energy to them. I mean, you know, it's a livelier clubhouse. You know, just to have somebody who can hit up there at the top of the order, you know, gets on base, and they didn't have that, you know, and they're not a power team. You know, Murphy and Cardullo, I think the only guys with double-digit home runs. And, you know, they need to manufacture runs on this team, and to have a guy like Dahl up there at the top, it's been huge. And I think beyond that, you know, just like on a major league team, if you have a young player come up and starts doing really well right off the bat, he is going to ignite others in a different way, not just in the what he's doing on the field, but it sends a message to players. And that message is, hey, there's somebody down below who can come up and take my job. You know, if I don't start hitting better, he's going to take my job like he took Noel Cuevas' job. So, you know, it's just a situation where, you know, Dahl has in that sense, I think he woke them up, you know, and that promotion just woke them up as a team. And yeah, you'll see that sometimes.
Yeah, this is a team coming off like a 13-game losing streak coming into the end of June. They went 9-20 in May. They went 8-20 in June. But they're 12-6 in July. Is really just one guy that can really do that much for an organization when he comes up from the minor leagues or from the lower levels, I guess?
Well, I don't, you know, it's hard to say if it was just one guy. I think there was just a moment for, you know, in the midst of that losing streak. You looked at it, the starters, 13 straight losses, the starting pitchers still delivered 7 quality starts. They had a 3.94 ERA, which for Albuquerque is amazing. And I think there was, you know, you talked to the hitters to a man, and they all said the same thing, which is like, we let our pitchers down. For those 13 games, the hitters, they didn't hit. They scored 27 runs in 13 games. So I think it was a little bit of Dahl's arrival and then just a bit of, you know, we've got to do something different. And don't forget, one other thing that was kind of lost in all that, Jordan Patterson got hurt. He missed 7 of those 13 games with the ankle injury after he collided with Cuevas in the outfield. So I think that, you know, that was your other big guy. I mean, he's been the metronome of the offense this year. You know, when you look at his numbers, he's had pretty much a 400-plus OBP all season. So you took him away as well, and that really killed him. And then he got back in there. He started doing what he does. And then you add Dahl. And then I think at some point, you know, Tom Murphy had his, his come to Jesus moment, let's just say.
Sure. Yeah.
And he, you know, I think he finally really took to heart what the coaching staff was telling him. And then the next thing you knew, he started taking off and, you know, and then it just snowballed with all of them, you know, and so they won 9 in a row to tie a team record.
And we'll talk about Tommy Murphy here in a couple of minutes as well. But David Dahl, this is how you know how good things have been going for David Dahl. Dude's got 7 hits in his last 6 games, and his batting average has tumbled 52 points over that span. He's got at least one hit in all 14 games he's played in AAA. And, Chris, I wanted to ask you about this because I got a chance to talk to Albuquerque hitting coach John Shelby after one of David Dahl's most ridiculous nights since he got started. It was his third game in AAA.
Which one?
4-for-5. Yeah, basically, when he was batting .667, whereas his average peaked after putting up 10 hits in his first 3 games in AAA. But what John Shelby said was the thing that he really liked about Dahl was he wasn't trying to do anything specific. He wasn't trying to be a pull hitter. He wasn't trying to be a slap hitter. He's hitting the ball all over the place and just reacting. And I got a chance to ask David about this yesterday on the minor league podcast, because when you jump up a level, you're seeing a lot of guys who you haven't seen before regardless. But what the Rockies encounter now is they don't play a lot of people, a lot of teams in the PCL that also have affiliates in the Eastern League. A lot of the PCL clubs have their affiliates in the Texas or the Southern League. So for David Dahl, he's playing a lot of teams in the Eastern League that have their next step in the International League. So he hasn't seen a lot of these pitchers so far. So what has been the most impressive thing about the way that he's gone out? Because there's not a whole lot of preparation that you can do. It's really just more reaction. And what's been exceedingly impressive in that regard, through his 14 games so far, he's only struck out 8 times and he's walked 6 times.
I think the most impressive thing about Dahl is this totally fits his approach, though. David Dahl will tell you over and over again, if I'm not thinking when I go up to the plate, I'm going to get a hit. It kind of goes against the baseball wisdom that you want to be up there and you want to be thinking of your plan and your approach and you want to be thinking with that pitcher. For Dahl, it's the opposite. If his head is completely clear when he goes up to the plate, that's when he does his damage. You can see it in his body language and in at bat. There will be times when he'll step out of the batter's box, and you can kind of see him shake his head a little bit. And what he's doing is he's trying to shake any thoughts out. he is a reactive hitter. He is a guy who probably, about the only thing he might look at on the scouting report is the guy lefty or righty. That's probably about all he's going to look at. He's kind of the opposite of the sabermetric approach to things, but obviously it works for him. So Dahl is, he's a pure natural talent. He's not a big dude. Yeah, he's, let's see, let's say 6 foot about. Because someone asked this, I saw on Twitter, they asked, who would you compare Dahl to? Would you compare him to a young Ryan Braun?
Right.
But I know the guy he gets compared to a lot, though. If you just throw out the background, probably would be Andrew McCutchen. He's built like Andrew McCutchen. He's not a big guy.
Interesting.
He's kind of fun. He's like wiry strong, and what's really impressive about Dahl is just his ability to go the other way. I mean, because as soon as the pitchers are starting to get a read on, okay, let's look at this guy. Oh my God, he can hit anything. They started trying to bust him inside over and over and over, and so then he goes out and hits an opposite field grand slam, dropping in opposite field singles. He's dropping in opposite field doubles. He's going, and if he needs to, he'll just go inside out on his swing. And, he's making these adjustments, but if you ask him about it, he's probably going to be like, well, I just did what I did. There's not like a complex plan. Jordan Patterson goes up there with a complex plan, whereas Dahl is just reacts. But he's baseball IQ and his physical ability are so sharp that his reaction seems like, this genius, well thought out move when it's really just instantaneous.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because that is, very much the answer that he gave us yesterday on the Minor League Podcast, which is, he said, when I'm on deck, I literally just try to hum a song so I'm not thinking about anything when I get into the batter's box. Like, that's his approach. He'll watch, he'll pay attention, but that's his mindset, is to shut it all down and just go off of that instinctive reaction, and it's worked for him so far. The numbers are ridiculous. His numbers in Double-A were very, very good. He finished there 76 games, 278, 367, 500 was his slash line there, with 13 homers and 45 RBIs. Let's pivot away from David Dahl and move to a guy who made a start last night for the first time in over 2 weeks. And we're starting to see now one of the things that we knew would eventually come into play with this guy, and that's Jeff Hoffman. Last night, he was limited to 76 pitches over 3 2/3 innings. That was his first start since July 5th. Now, this is something we've talked a lot about Jeff Hoffman on the show. Obviously, we've both said multiple times we didn't think that we were going to see Jeff Hoffman at any point this season in the major leagues. And the reason why is this. John Gray last year was very much limited for the Rockies at the end of the season. The biggest difference between John Gray and Jeff Hoffman is this is the first time Jeff Hoffman will go wire to wire through a professional baseball season since he had Tommy John surgery in 2014 when he came out of ECU, East Carolina, and went to the Blue Jays in the draft that year. But it seems like those wheels are starting to turn. The Rockies are going to start limiting him. What, from last night, not a great start, obviously, what came out of that, Chris, in terms of what you heard from Jeff Hoffman or around Jeff Hoffman?
Well, the big thing with Hoffman last night, he pitched well for 3 innings, and then he was starting to struggle a bit with his command. I think it's, the Isotopes will talk a lot, especially, you talk to Daryl Scott, the pitching coach. They always talk about, you go up there with a plan, but that your plan needs to be oriented toward executing a pitch, not the result of the pitch. And I think Hoffman And again, it happened today with Eddie Butler, and you could say it probably happened their last starts for both Kyle Freeland and Harrison Musgrave. You know, as a pitcher, though, it's still hard to not suddenly get results oriented. And sometimes, you know, a blooper, a bleeder, a line drive that somebody just misses catching, you know, or just a pitch that an umpire just decides, no, that's a ball, even though it's been a strike all game. You know, it starts to eat away at them. And I think it's just been sort of this weird little trend that's been happening with all the starters. And I saw that with Hoffman last night. You know, he came off the mound barking at the home plate umpire. He gave him quite the earful. Ump showed some pretty good restraint in not tossing him at that point. But, you know, and it was, you know, you could tell he'd been off for 2 weeks, basically, except for the one Futures game appearance. It wasn't, you know, he threw a lot of fastballs early. His command of his slider seemed to really come and go a lot. And, you know, the curveball was probably his best weapon, but he couldn't throw that all the time because it's such a slow curve that if you hang one at altitude or it just doesn't break like you want it to, that thing's going up into the berm. So, you know, I think it was just kind of a little bit of a rusty start for him, but it's just, like I said, it's just been a weird trend with the whole pitching staff lately. You know, the 9-game winning streak, they had zero quality starts.
Wow, that's so weird. So,
I know, it's just bizarre. It's just like they were an old-fashioned isotopes team. They hit their way to 9 straight wins. And then the bullpen, you know, credit where that's due, too. The bullpen's been outstanding of late.
Have you seen Hoffman get frustrated like that with umpires, too, when things aren't necessarily going his way? Or was that a new thing that you saw there, him barking at the umpire?
I've never seen him bark at an umpire.
Really?
I've never. Jeff is not. He's very open and very honest in his post-game interviews, but he's not. You know, he tries to stay on that even keel. He really does try to follow the advice of his pitching coach and, you know, never get too high or too low. And so, you know, he's very self-analytical. He's almost like, you know, again, the opposite of a David Dahl. He's very much a thinking pitcher. And so, yeah, to see him get that frustrated was a little surprising. To me, it didn't have anything to do with the, you know, it's not like Hoffman went into that game and suddenly they're like, we're pulling you. He knew there was a pitch count. You know, he's fully aware, I'm sure, of the innings, whatever, you know, the secret innings limit is for him this year. So, you know, he understands all that. That was purely frustration with the strike zone.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because last year, through a couple of levels, he finished with 104 total innings. Right now, he's at 102. Now, usually you get maybe like a 20 to 25% increase in innings after a guy gets Tommy John surgery. And that would really only put him at, what, 130, 140 innings, maybe topping out at that. Is there any inkling that you have heard from around the clubhouse, from Jeff himself, from the isotopes, what that magic number might be for Hoffman this season?
No, I haven't heard a thing. They keep these things very, very tight-lipped, you know. When the Rockies came in here, somebody compared them to the Dodgers, and they said at least the Rockies don't treat everything like it's a CIA-level state secret. But I think in this second year with Breidich in charge, that's changed. I mean, they really are keeping a lot of this stuff very close to the vest. And, you know, they can even get a little touchy about some of these some things like this, you know, and I asked Hill about it last night just because I needed it confirmed, and his whole thing was, come on. So, I mean, these are state secrets for the Rockies, and, you know, it's the way they're going to be. But my guess has always been, somewhere in that 130 to 140 range, which would put him being shut down, you know. I mean, it's hard to skip a start, you know, or give him 5 days off or something. I don't think they want to do that going forward. So, you know, he may be done barring, you know, an unexpected call up after, if they trade De La Rosa or something, they really want to get a look at him. But I really imagine he'll probably be done pitching sometime around mid-August.
Chris, aside from, and it's interesting because going into this season, you already had a feeling that was going to be the case. I asked Rockies player development director Zach Wilson about that back in March when I got a chance to spend a day at Rocky spring training on some of the backfields. And he said, quote, it's hard to tell at this point. Certainly as we get through probably the first month of the season, we'll be able to start to understand exactly what we want to do with him and how we want to approach the rest of the year. This guy's 1 year coming off Tommy John. He's gotten through that year healthy. And I think no matter if a guy's had Tommy John or not, you have to build up his limits and pitch counts and his innings limits to a point that you feel comfortable with as a guy grows throughout the system. So I think, especially using John Gray as a guide last year, like I said, has been basically healthy throughout his entire career. He had a little bit of a rough patch toward the end of his 2014 season when he was coming off of a really good year with Double A Tulsa. But this seemed like it was coming anyway for Jeff Hoffman, which is why we've kind of urged people to pump the brakes on the Jeff Hoffman love. But there have been flashes for him this season of flat-out brilliance, and that's what gets people excited. The start, especially against Reno on June 19th, comes to mind. He gave up a couple of solo homers, 5 hits, 11 strikeouts, and no walks in that start, went 7 innings. I mean, what have you seen from him that people should be excited about? Because so often our conversation is, how is this going to fall apart for the Rockies? But really, I mean, when you look at the success John Gray has had, when you look at the success Tyler Anderson has had, they're doing something right, albeit in small sample sizes right now. What are the things about Jeff Hoffman that you've seen that people should be this high on him about?
Well, he had one at bat. I was charting his velocity, so now on the Topes radar gun for the stadium is a little off, but regardless of what it actually is, it's usually +3 or +4. What I noticed in that at bat, his ability to change speed, his ability to alter his location, I mean, it basically comes down to his command and control. He's got phenomenal stuff. I mean, for him to be able to fire off a 98-mile-per-hour fastball high, and then to drop that super slow 75-mile-per-hour curve that just drops off the deck, that's devastating to a hitter. And, you know, I mean, we're talking about top prospect hitters, because there's a ton of them in the PCL this year, and veteran guys who've been around and play a lot of big league time, and they're swinging and missing these things. They're standing there frozen. Hoffman has it in. He's got the stuff. I think he's got the poise. I think he's got the right mindset. It's just a matter of, like you said, it's just they're going to play cautious. They know what they've got with this guy. This is a top of the rotation major league starter. He has that ceiling. He has the chance to be the rarest of rare things. In fact, I don't know if there's ever been an all-star starting pitcher from the Rockies. He could be that. That is his ceiling. Now, is he going to reach that? Is everything it's pitching? You know, as Dodger fans can tell you right now about Clayton Kershaw, God knows what can happen in a season.
Right.
So, you know, I don't want people to be like, you know, he's the second coming or something, but he has a chance to be one of the best pitchers this organization has ever had. And because of that, and they're cognizant of that, they're going to be super cautious with him, which I know drives so many people so crazy. I had a Rockies fan on Twitter last night, like, just badgering me about why do they do this? Why do they baby these guys? And I'm sitting there going, every team in baseball would baby this guy.
It's like the Dodgers and Urias. The Dodgers are babying Urias this year for the most part.
Exactly. Look at what the Pirates have done with Glass now.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And what's so interesting, too, is every organization, and I basically become one of those guys who took like a sociology 101 class, and now I think I'm qualified to talk on everything as it pertains to the way people treat each other. But no, I read, you know, The Arm by Jeff Passan, and what's so interesting about it is the science is so inexact about all of this. But what the common theme is, teams want to be overly cautious and overly protective, because even though maybe Jeff Hoffman goes out this year, you throw him out there for 180 innings and he's totally fine, he pitches for the next 15 years of his career at 100% health. Maybe that happens, but nobody knows, and so teams don't want to risk that. And the Rockies, for, you know, 20-plus years of franchise history, have not gained the benefit of the doubt, and that's understandable from the fan base. But, yeah, like you said, Chris, people need to understand every organization does this. This is not a Rockies thing.
Yeah, it's baseball-wide, and you're right. And what kind of struck me as a little odd, you know, I don't know if it's Hill giving me the full truth or not. I asked him about it one time, like, you know, it was one of the first games of the year where somebody went, I think it was Musgrave, went like 105 pitches. And I asked him if we reach the point of the season where these guys, you know, the pitch counts are kind of going to get to their maximum as what you're going to allow in a start. And he was saying, yeah, basically. And I said, okay, so is it different by individual, or is there just a uniform number that these guys can't ever exceed? And he said, there's a uniform number. But I have a feeling for each Rocky starter, there is in the minors, you know, there's a different number. I'm sure Shane Carl could go higher as a non-priority guy than Kyle Freeland.
Right.
So I, you know, and certainly, obviously the guys who've had an injury history, they're going to be treated with the most kid gloves, or just a guy, you know, we saw it with Gray last year. If you're the prospect, you're going to be more limited than other guys. But in the case of what they see out there, I think a lot of the time it's just how is the guy pitching? You know, Eddie Butler only threw 76 pitches today. Why? Well, they had to lift him. He was getting shelled. He threw 5 1/3 no hit innings, and then he went out and then suddenly just imploded. But that's, you know, so the, you know, you have to take everything on a case by case basis, just day by day, inning by inning. I've seen guys, you know, wow, he's brilliant. Oh God. And then he's brilliant again. And then, oh God, and he's done. And that's that. I think that was Musgrave's last start, and that was Freeland's last start. They, you know, I think they each pitched around 6 innings, and you know, 4 of them were brilliant, and 2 of them were uh-oh. So yeah, pitching is the most inexact science in the history of the world. And if I swear to God, if somebody could figure out how to prevent pitcher injuries, like a foolproof pitcher by pitcher plan, that dude would be a billionaire.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's shift gears a little bit to a guy that Rockies fans might know a little bit about. He came up to the big leagues last year, but had a late start to this season, only at 237 in May, only hit 178 in June. But whatever happened when the calendar turned to July 1st, something clicked for this guy. And I'm talking about Tommy Murphy, catching prospect for the Rockies. He's hitting 667 in June. You think, okay, he's 2 for 3. He's, you know, 6 for 8, whatever. No. Or 4 for 6, whatever. He is hitting 22 for 33. I do math. 22 for 33 in the month of July. 5 home runs, so 13 ridiculous. RBI.
Like, what, 22 for 33.
What the hell happened to Tommy Murphy that turned him into not even Babe Ruth? Babe Ruth didn't put up those numbers. Ty Cobb didn't put up those numbers.
Turned him into John Dowd.
Turned him literally into Reggie Stocker. Yeah. Like, what happened to Tommy Murphy when the calendar turned to July?
You know, I think that's one of those state secrets that they're not going to tell us exactly what they did. But I really feel like they sat him down, and I just have this image of them basically telling him, like, if you don't shape up, because look at the opportunity ahead of him. Nick Hundley is a free agent at the end of this year. And as good defensively as Tony Walters is, you're probably never going to give him 60 to 70% of the starts behind the plate because he does drag the offense down. So, Tom Murphy, this is your chance. You have the opportunity to be a major league starting catcher next year.
Yeah.
Wake up.
He had 31 hits in the first 39 games and has 22 hits in his last 9. I mean, it's absurd.
No, he's hitting it hard. That's the thing. These aren't soft hits. These aren't bloops and bleeders. He is hammering the baseball. And, you know, that strength has always been there. And he's one of these guys in the tops. They had a few who are just these crazy work ethic. I mean, they just work all the time. And like Glenn Allen Hill said, it's great to see that payoff. You know, it's great to see the results finally be there for the effort he's putting in. So I don't think it was anything truly mechanical. You know, we're kind of at the stage of the season where it's never a mechanical adjustment for these guys. It's a mental adjustment first, and if that leads to something mechanical, then maybe. But I think in the end, they just somehow they finally got through it. And they finally got through whatever stubbornness had crept into his head and was keeping him from hitting. And, you know, the switch was flipped or whatever cliche you want to throw out there. But what he's doing has been truly remarkable. And consider this fact. He's a catcher. He doesn't play every day. You know, usually the Topes have him on for 2 and then Garneau for 2 and then Murphy for 2 and then Garneau for 2. And they have not played a lot of American League teams lately where they have the option of DHing one of them. So he stayed hot even where he's had a couple days off in there. And that to me is the most remarkable thing. And that's the best sign for the Rockies because Garneau's hitting pretty well too in that same scenario. And if you're up there in Colorado, you're going, okay, I am now about 20% less concerned about our catching situation for 2017 than I was 3 weeks ago.
In Tommy Murphy's first 2 full months of the season, he had 9 multi-hit games. He had 7 multi-hit games in a row from July 1st through July 15th. 7 multi-hit games in a row, and only one of those is a 2-hit game. Everything else is 3 or 4 hits. Like, this is stuff that does not happen in baseball. And the thing that I think really stands out about this, too, is, I mean, so far, you know, we're into the latter stages of July now. He's only played 48 games, so it's not, you know, that he's going to be in 100 games at the end of the season. We're really going to get that full breadth look at Tommy Murphy for a full season. He didn't play at all until May 6th. But, Chris, as you noted, I mean, this is a pitching staff that's actually fared pretty well. It's got a staff ERA of 4.61, which in Albuquerque is a pretty good number. That's middle of the pack in the PCL. That is always the key for a Rockies catching prospect, is how is he as a receiver? How is he as a kind of a field general, a guy who's calling games? How has he looked defensively? Because we know, obviously, what he's been able to put together with the bat. But for so long, that was the book on Tommy Murphy, was good offensive prospect, but also intensely cerebral, very good game manager. What's he looked like defensively?
Defensively, he's looked good in all but one aspect. And it's probably, unfortunately or unfortunately for him, it is the one thing that people tend to zero in on, and that's throwing out base runners. He's still not very good at that. Now,
good news is he'll fit right in. So,
yeah. Well, you know, but the thing is most people will tell you, you can't really, most of the time you can't even blame the catcher when that's happening. It's
exactly
the pitcher's inability to hold somebody on. So you'd have to probably go back to every stolen base attempt against Murphy and look at the tape and see how well the pitcher was doing. When Billy Burns steals on you, Billy Burns is going to steal on a lot of people because he's insanely fast. And there have been those guys, but there have been some times where he's had some time and he's thrown the ball and it's sailed in the center field and you're like, hey. And I think the problem is he's next to Garneau, who's really quite good at throwing out base runners. Garneau is one of the best catchers that I've seen play for the Isotopes in that aspect. As far as calling a game, as having to trust the pitching staff and blocking the plate, all of those things, Murphy is pretty much Garneau's equal. So I think, you know, again, he's good enough right now to catch in the major leagues, and I think he would quite easily get the trust of his pitching staff. It's just, you know how people are. It's the most visible thing they see with a catcher defensively is the throwing. And in that regard, he's still got a little work to do, and they've said he's got a little work to do on that. So that's just part of the ongoing process, and that just kind of reminds us that, you know, as good as he's been, he has lost development time over the years. Losing most of the 2014 season, I think, has actually been fairly critical up to this point. You know, he is, in a way, making up for lost time to fit that calendar point to be ready to replace Hundley next season. He'd probably be a little further along in his development, both in terms of maybe drawing more walks and throwing out base runners, if he hadn't lost, 60-70% of a season. So,
right.
Got to factor that in there, too.
Another guy that Rockies Twitter gets all a flutter about, that, you know, well, we've seen some issues at the big league level with certain positions, the left field position right now with Gerardo Parra on the DL, Brandon Barnes hasn't really done much. Jordan Patterson is a name that comes up a lot for us. And right now he's hitting .317 down in Albuquerque, a .903 OPS, 6 homers, stolen 7 bases. He's got some gap to gap power, not necessarily a power guy, but there's a reason why he's been kept down at the AAA level pretty much the entire season. And it's kind of the splits, especially left versus right. He's hitting just .186 against left-handed pitching this year, .364 mark against righties. So that's probably one of the big reasons why he's stayed down. But Jordan Patterson, what have you seen from him? Do you think he could contribute at some point to the big league level, or is he still not quite ready for prime time?
Honestly, I'd say of everyone on this team, he'd be my pick to go up right now, and he could help.
Okay.
I honestly think he can. Would he essentially be filling sort of that platoon role? Yeah. I mean, you know, I'll say this about him. Yeah, I know the numbers don't look great against left-handed pitching, but I'd sooner put up Jordan Patterson against a left-handed pitcher than I would Ben Paulson.
Okay.
He competes in his at-bats against lefties, whereas some of the other left-handed hitters on this team look completely lost. So, and beyond that, this is something people don't talk about because they always look at the hitting. Jordan Patterson's a really good right fielder. Mm. You know, he's got tremendous range. He's got a great arm. He's very, very accurate and strong arm. He's made a couple spectacular catches the last few days. And I think it's one thing, you know, and I'm sure he can, you know, he can play left. He's told me, like, I'd love to play center. He's like, I don't think they're going to let me play center, but I can play center if I'm ever needed to go there. He's passable at first base, but he doesn't play there, I don't think, often enough to get the necessary reps. But to me, yeah, he could, you know, if the Rockies sign, just say to hell with it with, I guess, with Barnes, you know, yeah, if I were them, I would definitely bring up Patterson. And I think he could contribute and, you know, be the better half of a platoon at the very least. But I think in time he could potentially do just enough to, you know, be a regular. You know, what ultimately that will have to entail down the line, I don't know. But his baseball IQ is he's the Hoffman of the lineup. He's just very high IQ guy, very smart player, very smart hitter, and just an all around good dude.
Some Topes talk with the Topes writer himself, Chris Jackson, who is on Twitter at Topes Writer and covers the Albuquerque Isotopes for PurpleRoad.com. Also does some work for us at MILB.com as well. And Chris, there's so many good storylines with the Topes. I feel like we scratched the surface of all the big ones, but there's a lot more that we will get a chance to talk about at some point down the road. And in the meantime, you're at a brewery. Go drink. Enjoy it.
Yeah.
I will. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Chris.
Great guy.
Again, a big thanks to
Great
Chris
guy,
Jackson.
Chris
He's so awesome. He's so awesome.
Sorry,
at Topes Writer on Twitter. I am for real. Follow him on Twitter. He's at Topes Writer. All kinds of good stuff from Isotopes Park on the regular from Chris Jackson. And that's going to do it for the 81st edition of the PDP. Again, you can head to Twitter and follow us there at Purple Dinocast. We are also individually on Twitter. Anthony is at Master Tones and I am at Tyler Mon. Head on over to iTunes, give us a rating and a review and a subscription if they're good. And you can get our stuff, purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com. There is one thing that I wanted to get to before we get out of here today. And this is an Ask PDP question from a couple of weeks ago that I forgot to answer on our most recent episode. And it comes from at CORocks2, which the question is, where did the phrase Bush League originate? And I've always wondered this, too, and so I did finally take the time to look it up, and this is the explanation. Bush, obviously a synonym for rural areas or the countryside, especially in Australia, according to the explanation I found, which is true. You go for a bushwalk, you go out in the bush, whatever it is, in Australia. Here we would call it, you know, the sticks, whatever. Yeah. But that's where this term originated. Back in the day, there were the big leagues and there were the bush leagues, because the bush leagues, the minor leagues, were located in rural areas outside of big cities, yada, yada. And one of the earliest references to that comes from the Lincoln, Nebraska Evening News in a report on February 4th or 6th. I don't know. No. The 21st of February, which says, quote, this is in 1902. Sioux City will belong to the North Tri-State League, composed of Rock Rapids, Sheldon, Lamars, Iowa, Flandreau, Yankton, and Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Yankton, generally known as the Bush League. So now we know. Now we know. And then that term migrated, kind of made it into baseball slang. Now we know. Now we know.
The more you know.
Dun, 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 dun. Next time I want to do Texas Leaguer.
Yeah.
I always wondered that, because the Texas League still exists.
Yes.
And I can't imagine it's just full of a bunch of bloopers. People hit bombs in the Texas League. People
hit big time bombs in the Texas League. Yeah.
It's pretty great.
You seen Joey Gallo did a lot of bloopers in the Texas League? I don't think so.
Yeah, no. Joey Gallo wasn't just blooping them over second base. So, you know, maybe next time. Maybe next time we'll talk Texas Leaguer. We'll do, or Baltimore Chop or Worm Burner. Some of these fun terms.
That's like an off season one. Just a. Let's get like a whole mess of terms that make no sense.
Yeah, we can do that.
And find their origin stories.
You can find Jesse Goldberg Strassler, the radio voice of the Lansing Lugnuts, who wrote that baseball thesaurus
book.
We could read out of that. We'll do all kinds.
By the way, next week, Craig Goldstein back on the show.
Craig Goldstein rejoins the show from Baseball Perspective.
We're going to mock you relentlessly for your love of Ross from Friends.
Let me tell you how excited I am to have Craig back on the show. This will be great.
We've got
Craig on the show
twice
prior. Last time,
all he did was make fun of me the entire time. So, yeah, that was
fun. I think that was the first time we just ripped on Anthony. The second time, we just talked about the pies that Craig was making for Thanksgiving. That was in 2014. And I'm really bummed that we didn't make that into an annual thing to do it last year. But we didn't do a Thanksgiving episode last year.
I was busy last year. I was in Stillwater, Oklahoma last year for Thanksgiving.
Stillwater. So, yeah, we'll have to do that this year. Get Craig back on. But I'm super excited. It's gonna be an hour long show of just ripping on me next week, and so get your insults in now, people.
Yeah.
Lord knows it's on the way. We'll be excited to talk to Craig. He's had a ton of good stuff about Rockies prospects all season long in Baseball Prospectus, so we will get to that. And until next week, thanks for tuning in. Buy our shirts.
Bye.
Bye.
So you got Chris Jackson's number in the DMs. I said we'd call him right around now, so if we want to just start with that, and then we can go from there. But
no, not so much.
Nope.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Nope.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let's.
You sound like you're from London.
You sound like you're from London.